Welcome to Versatile Strategy, a Marvel Crisis Protocol podcast. On this podcast, we hope to offer a unique perspective on roster creation, tournament and league review of those created rosters, and reviews of upcoming characters. I'm John.
And I'm Nick.
And on this episode, we have Ryan back to talk about what he's going to be playing in our local league. Ryan, say hello.
Hello there.
Do you want to give the listeners a quick rundown of who you are again real quick?
Yeah, so I guess just another local player. Ended up winning our last two tournaments previously and the league, the last league we played, all running Brotherhood for all three. So that's kind of the faction I've been drawn to recently and what I'm still playing.
Awesome. Why don't we move into some news, guys? There were some tactics cards that were shown off this week. Nick, do you want to run us through the first card?
Yeah, so the first card we're going to look at today is Sovereign Strike. This is one of the three cards coming in the Ursa Major and Red Guardian box, which will be out tomorrow as of this recording. So by the time this episode comes out, they should be available at your local shop. So Sovereign Strike is a Winter Guard active card. Any Winter Guard character may spend 3 power to play this card. Choose an interactive terrain feature size 4 or less within 4 of the character that played this card. All characters within 1 of the terrain feature suffer 2 damage, and then the terrain feature is destroyed and removed from the battlefield. So this is very similar to Mystique Sabotage or Punisher's Warzone. What do you guys think of this one?
Ryan, go ahead. What do you think of it?
I think it's an awesome effect. Seeing it on a card is a little less ideal than just an ability on a character, because I feel like whenever I use it on Mystique, it's maybe once per game. So seeing a maybe once per game effect taking up 1 of your slots feels a little bad. But the range on it, the size limit on it, is awesome. It's just that they have to be within 1, so if they know you're playing it, they could play around it the whole game, and that might be a wasted card slot. But it's an awesome effect. I hate seeing it on a card rather than a character.
Yeah, a couple things that stood out to me is that this is the second card we saw in the Winter Guard that may affect friendly characters. This says all characters, and Darkstar is also affected her allies as well as her enemies, so it's interesting that they've given this affiliation 2 different ways to effectively hurt themselves with tactics cards. I do like that it's size 4, because Punisher and Mystique are both size 3, and theirs cost actions. So it's interesting to see an out-of-activation, actionless way to blow up the terrain and cause damage. But to your point, Ryan, I think that the tactics card slots are almost more valuable than character actions, and to give up a slot for this might be a big ask.
I mean, it is 2 free damage, though. I like free damage. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, and you can definitely have a gacha moment.
2. Yeah, 2 is significant.
Yeah, for sure. When you get this off, it's really going to hurt, and it's really going to be awesome. It's just, how often are you going to get it off?
Yeah, kind of a high reward if you're able to catch somebody out, or if they're tucked into a secure objective and can't quite finish them off with an attack just to pay the power to guarantee it.
Yeah, I could have some mental games with it too, where, you know, I know you have it, and so I'm going to try to stay outside of 1 of all the terrain, but, oh, this one objective is just right next to a bunch of terrain, so I can't really. So it's like, do I get on it? Do I not?
Yeah, and if you're in your opponent's head, I think that is worth something. How often, Nick, were you playing Goblin, and Trick or Treat was always in my mind of not triggering that? So if someone knows this card's sitting in your sideboard, them playing around it might be worth its weight.
Yeah, I think it's scenario dependent. I think, I forget who it was, but someone else mentioned it, that something like this on something like Researcher would be very nasty, because mm-hmm. everyone is grouped up in the middle. So if there's something around that you can blow up and hurt a bunch of people, that's pretty valuable, I think. But we should move on to the next card. Don't spend too much time on that. John, do you want to run us through Bear Hug?
Sure. Bear Hug is an unaffiliated reactive card. When an enemy character declares a move action while within 1 of an allied Ursa Major, Ursa Major may play this card. The enemy character may spend 3 power. If they do not, they can only use the short movement tool when resolving this move action. What do you think, Nick?
I'm not sure, honestly. It's free, so that's something. And it's a reactive card, which is always nice. I feel like if you've got an Ursa Major within one of somebody, they're probably going to want to get away from him because he is pretty scary, I think, especially with that spender where you can stagger and throw somebody. I think I would like to see. I would have preferred to have this be like if they don't spend three, that movement action effectively is like a stagger, like they have to shake a stagger or something, but I don't know how that would work rules wise. So just having it be a short movement is kind of meh. And then they can just medium or long move away if they have that in their movement afterwards. And against short movers, this is just it's a tax that they never have to pay. So I'm not super crazy about it, honestly. But if you're using Ursa Major to get close to someone that with a medium or long movement that doesn't want him near them, it's probably okay. What do you think, Ryan?
I don't think I could have said it better myself. I mean, it's nice that it's reactive and free, but the penalty just does not seem worth it. The
No.
difference between a medium and a short tool. So, what medium's probably the average movement speed in the game is maybe an inch, maybe something around there. It's not that restrictive, and it's only the one movement action. If it was for both, this would be a lot better. Or like you said, if it just negated the one movement action, I think this would be awesome, but I don't think it's going to see a lot of play.
Yeah, it's crazy because if you ask me if I like the Loki tax, I love the Loki tax. Forcing people to spend power is amazing. But when you look at these tactics cards that do it, Bear Hug, it reminds me of Mind If I Cut In with Rogues. I've never seen a Rogue player have that card because people that care about it just pay the power, and if they don't care about it, it's a wasted card. Like, I don't think this one's going to see a lot of play.
Agreed.
Do you want to run us through Comrade's Keeper, Nick?
Sure. This one I'm a little bit more excited about, and I think that's kind of the general consensus from what I've been hearing from people. Comrade's Keeper is an unaffiliated active, reactive card. When an enemy character targets an allied character within three of an allied Red Guardian with an attack, Red Guardian may spend two power to play this card. Place Red Guardian within two of the allied character. Red Guardian becomes a target of the attack, regardless of range and line of sight. If Red Guardian suffers damage from this attack and is not dazed after the attack is resolved, throw the attacking character away from Red Guardian short. Very reminiscent of Heroes for Hire. I still think it's probably worse than Heroes for Hire, but that's definitely the closest thing we've seen before, so. What do you guys think of this one?
Yeah, I think it's going to be fantastic and probably an autoplay in every list with him. Like you said, it's very similar to Heroes for Hire. I'd have to double check what the exact differences are because I haven't played Heroes for Hire in a while. I think one of the differences is he has to be damaged by it, whereas I think with Heroes for Hire, they don't have to be damaged. So that's a huge plus for Heroes for Hire. But yeah, I think this card is fantastic and probably going to see a lot of play.
Yeah, so he has to be damaged for the throw and not dazed, whereas Heroes for Hire, they just have to not daze. However, he gets to place within range two, whereas Heroes for Hire places them within range one. And then Heroes for Hire is a size three throw. Does Comrade Keeper have a size limit on it?
Does not.
It does not. So you can theoretically Comrade's Keeper a Dormammu and throw them into somebody. So
Yeah. What's
that's
the
not
range on the throw
terrible.
for Comrade's Keeper? It's covered up
It's
in my
short.
picture. It's short
It's
as well.
short.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think my only concern with it is he seems a little more fragile than Dania and Luke Cage, that he's just going to get one shot and then you're not getting throw. If you're going against like big dice pools with only the defense he has, if he gets one shot. I mean, I guess it's still sacrificed and it's not restricted at that point. But if you're playing it for the throw, you gotta be careful you're not getting him one shot.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
he
mean,
can
if you.
still use his reactive power to add blanks, right?
Yeah, that's four power, though, between that and this card, and I don't know if he generates power that well.
Because he has to spend the two, unlike Heroes for Hire, where someone else hires out the other character to bodyguard.
Yeah,
it's a big
and when
ask.
you're looking at Danny, he just gets to count blanks of his physical energy with Master Martial Artist. So, right there, Danny's more tanky. Luke has the damage reduction.
Although I suppose he does have Red Guardian suit, so if he's damaged and not dazed, not only does he get the throw, he gets an additional power. So that's something, I guess.
Yeah, and that way
But yeah, I just.
you're refunding the cost of the card that way.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so not as good as Heroes for Hire, but I still think it'll see play.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the cards that you're looking for if you've got Red Guardian in your list.
Yeah, if you're trying to make Winter Guard work and he's in your list, definitely it's in the 10, right? Do we want to move on to what I think is the most exciting card we saw this week?
Yeah, I want you to read that one for
This
us.
one is going to be all of the setup for an amazing reward, and that is the High Council. It's a Hydra card and it's active. If all of the following conditions are met simultaneously, an allied Hydra character may play this card. Johann Schmidt is not dazed and has six or more power. Artem Zola is contesting a secure objective. Wolfgang von Strucker is not dazed and is within two of two or more enemy characters with the poison special condition. Helmut Zemo has dazed or KO'd an enemy character this round. Whole lot of ask, but here's the reward. Place an unused character with a threat value of four or less from your roster within two of this character. It is now part of your squad. Nick, what do you think?
It's a lot of hoops to jump through. I mean, it's a very cool effect, but we've seen cards with hoops before, like Difficult to Please, and I don't think a lot of people are playing that one. And this one is, I would say, significantly harder than that. Yeah, I guess it's important to note that either Red Skull is going to be able to play this one, but it's very cool. I don't know how often it's going to actually work, but.
Ryan, any thoughts?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Hulkbuster effect where if you ever get it off, it feels awesome and it's super cool. But man, so many hoops, especially the Strucker one. Not dazed and is within range two of two or more enemy characters with the poison special condition.
I think it screams to you to play his leadership, which to Nick's point might mean that core Red Skull's in the list.
Quick lightning round then. If you do manage to get this off, who's coming in?
Ryan, who's your fourth threat you're bringing in?
I feel like I would need to see the whole roster and how they play. 'Cause man, I can't even remember Hydra off the top of my head and like what characters don't make the table. You know, like what it would probably be, you know, one that's right outside of your core but barely made it. Like barely didn't make it, I mean.
So I'm assuming we're gonna have both Red Skulls, Zola, Strucker, Zemo, Viper, Sin, Crossbones, and Taskmaster, and then Bob.
It doesn't have to be
Honestly,
Hydra
if
though, right? It can just be someone from your roster, so you can have an unaffiliated
yeah, it
drop.
could
could
just
be
be someone.
anybody.
The one that I'm gonna reach for, I think, if I'm trying to play this, is Omega Red, because he can take advantage of that poison on Strucker. He's got to have the extra power to do the death factor, but if you drop him in and tag one or two people, or gain two power in some way when you drop him in, then you have that opportunity to get that free damage. And like I said before, I love free damage. But what about you, John? Who's your fourth threat that you're reaching for?
For no rhyme or reason, and probably just because you always mention him, I'm just gonna go Sinister.
I like it. I like
Yep, just come on in and go to Beam Town, or maybe you can get some genetic samples and play some jank and get somebody else in. I don't know. I think overall, this card, though, is going to be something on a Friday night game night you're definitely going to try. It's definitely something fun. But on the top tier competitive tournament play that we're looking at, it probably doesn't make the list. But it's definitely difficult to please. If I play Brotherhood on a Friday night, I'm definitely trying to get that off, you know? Or the Iron Man suit. Just kind of fun jank that you can play with the game. And it's not something bad to like just kind of try to set up and see if you can make it happen.
I was gonna say I have actually managed to get back in the Hulkbuster armor in a game, and it was pretty awesome. So definitely like a bucket list thing to do in this game, along with like trying to pull off Fearful Symmetry or things like
Yeah, I
that.
mean, stuff like that is so fun, right? When we get together with people that might not play as much as us, or like as a learning game, if someone's playing Web Warriors, yeah, I'll bring Kraven and see if I can get it. It's fun. I haven't been able to, but I've tried a couple times, so.
Yeah, agreed. Fun factors off the charts, but might not be super competitive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that wraps up this week's news, so why don't we get into the next segment, which is going to be Ryan's league roster. You were on beforehand, Ryan, where we played in the last tournament, and you had that roster. So is this one that you're playing in the league changed from that, or is it completely new?
It is a modification for the standard formats. There are some big changes. Thanos ended up coming out because the two stones being restricted cards is a huge tax to pay. I still think he could have a place in the list if you are comfortable without playing, say, Brace or Patchup. But, you know, I feel like a lot of us still have that crux of, having at least one healing card in our list. So just having the option of Patchup versus Thanos that might not come in every single game because he's 8 points. It tipped me in that favor of dropping Thanos for the additional restricted card access. So for characters, I'm running kind of the same core almost. I believe I dropped one of them for affiliated characters. I've got Magneto, Juggernaut, Rogue, Mystique, and Toad. I believe from the last list, I had dropped Scarlet Witch. She's still on the sideline, but has never made the table when I've been playing this list, at least as of more recently and more competitively. And then for the additional five characters, all unaffiliated, we've got Hulk, who kind of replaced that beefy higher threat value slot that Thanos was kind of in. He's got a little bit of control with his throw that he can do every turn, a little bit of mobility with the leap, and he's probably getting, you know, maybe an extra power to each round from Magneto's leadership. And Super Killy, if he can get an objective, he'll tank it for a few turns, but a few times I have played him, he has died, but he's gotten through, you know, at least three or four rounds before they got there, and definitely worth it so far. Black Panther at four. I believe he replaced Dr. Voodoo. I wanted to have a flex pick with if I go into Mystique's leadership where I need to go a little wide, more objective gameplay. I love Black Panther, his long movement, super tanky, you know, outside of Mystic attacks, and can kind of just go sit on a flank and, you know, maybe control a point, pick up an extract and just sit there and knock people off of it and just tank a bunch of hits, kind of do his own thing. Doesn't need a lot of support. we still have Domino in the list for kind of the same reasons, her incinerate and just kind of be able to sit on a back point and, you know, pop a couple rapid fire attacks off or get an incinerate with a, you know, if I get a lucky explosive and get some free damage from that as well. Super nice. I think she's a nice little pick because she gives me an extra energy attack as well. Black Cat's still on the list for pretty much the same reasons. She's a nice stagger if there's a lot of Hulks kind of running around or big characters I want to just sit there and stagger every turn. Or she's good for those single extracts where, you know, my opponent might find it first or find it on the other side of the table. I can always bring her and kind of have a little security there so she can, you know, double long move and grab it or, you know, move, grab it, grapple away. You know, she's got some options there, a nice toolkit. And with Magneto's leadership, she'll have the power to do a lot of that a lot sooner. And last but not least is a very new model that still not sure how I feel if he's going to stay in the list or not, but he's been, you know, average or above average for me so far. So need to get a few more games in throughout the league and see if he's going to see if he's a keeper. And that's Heimdall the All-Seeing. When I first saw him, I thought he'd be really cool to run with Brotherhood, mostly because you've seen a lot of people run Lockjaw and Magneto to kind of offset his slow movement, teleport him around. He also kind of replaces, it's nowhere near as good as the extra dice that Thanos gives out, but he gives rerolls to all allied characters within three, and that's on almost every dice roll, I believe. Attacking, defending, dodging during the modified dice step, and you can also do it when rolling for crisis card or team tactics effects. Granted, there was some new ruling around, I think, the tactics card thing, but probably doesn't come up enough to really matter. But three threat, six health on the front, five on the back. That extra health on the front has come into play a lot. You know, that's kind of what his defensive tech is just that extra health, kind of similar to what I think Valkyrie might have, an extra health on her front side as well, instead of any real defensive power. But he does have the option to reroll his own defensive dice if he needs to. But he's typically been spending power, giving, you know, Magneto extra rerolls or, you know, Juggernaut to try to get models off the table. So those are my character cards. Any questions, any comments on those?
Nick, what do you think of the characters?
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, I like it. I'll be interested to see at the end of this how Heimdall works out for you, because I know we played a game earlier this week, and I brought Heimdall in my convocation list, and I was a little underwhelmed, just because he never seemed like he had power. Just spending two power every round for one reroll of two dice, and his attacks don't really hit that hard. And you did a pretty good job of ignoring him in that game, so he really didn't have any power until it was too late to do anything. So I'll be interested to see how Brotherhood kind of feeds him power, and if that really ups his value for you. Hulk makes sense. I mean, we had a guy in our local scene playing Hulk, Juggernaut, and Magneto, and just gamma launching Hulk across, or gamma launching Jugs across the table, so that's always fun. I don't know if you're running gamma launch or not in the list, so we'll get to that when we talk about your tactic cards. But yeah, Brotherhood's fun. I definitely understand why you're sticking with them. You've had enough success with them that it makes sense. And Magneto's leadership is definitely one of the more fun leaderships in the game. So I like it. Brotherhood's a blast.
Yeah, I
John?
was curious that you dropped Voodoo and then we got to Cat, and I'm a firm believer that you don't need both. I think one or the other is enough in a 10-man roster, unless you're trying to skew all the way to control. But if you're just attrition and need one little piece in there, you don't need both. And I think Panther is a great replacement. You know, if you're playing a B and you do end up going wide, where Voodoo could move to the enemy B, Panther can get there as well. Same threat. Panther's a good choice for you. The fact that you can give him power, or if you're playing the Mystique leadership, he's getting that power refunded. Overall, it's a solid choice there. Interesting they dropped Scarlet Witch, but I know you were having a hard time finding room for her on the table. So when we get on later to my roster, when you get to characters you don't play over and over and over, it's probably time to take a look at them and cut them. So good on you for making that decision. Why no Quicksilver? You still not a fan?
No, I haven't gotten him to the table anytime recently, and the past games I have, he just hasn't done enough. Like I said, kind of last time, Mystique and Black Cat kind of do similar things where, you know, they're long movers, and you know, Black Cat's got, I feel like, an almost better way to steal objectives. Mystique's got a few more yet different tricks in her toolkits. And she also comes along with, oh gosh, what's her card called?
Deception.
Deception. Yeah, Deception is a huge gameplay maker right there. Yeah, he just has not impressed me enough to hit the table. Colossus was one I was hoping to get to the table before, you know, the next tournament or league, but haven't yet. He's kind of been on the sideline to try out eventually in some casual games to see if he can make it. I'm still thinking he might be a little too slow. Probably take an entire turn to get into the fight, but like we said last time, you know, if he can get into the fight and stay in it, you know, in a certain setup where the fight's not moving or rotating a lot, I think he could definitely bring a bunch of value. And I'd like to see what he does for me.
Yeah, I think Quicksilver has a couple problems. He's built to be this kind of dashy objective runner, but Speedster doesn't allow him to make the superpower move if he's holding an objective.
Yeah, I
Ghost
mean,
Rider can, but he costs
Toad does it
five. Yeah,
better.
Toad is better for a point less, or you go up to Ghost Rider to five who can do it with objectives. He's built to be this character that you can go higher or lower, and either of them are better. I know, Nick, you were playing him in some rosters in the past, and it seemed like we were always trying to bait the dash or the velocity triggers off the supersonic strike, and when you need them, you never get them. And it's so frustrating to get to a point where, oh, I need the short advance to do this, this, and that, and you don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the Vibranium Heist that you and I played where Doom Prophecy was still non-Asgard, and I tried the Doom Prophecy All You've Got Quicksilver thing that you could do and just fell flat, and it was just very deflating.
Yeah, I think you made 4 7 die attacks and didn't get the trigger once.
Yeah, yep. It was
that. It was a that thing. Memory is burned into my mind as the what is happening of it. I think we threw your dice away and went and bought another pack. And I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
should probably show up. All right, Ryan, those characters make a lot of sense. Why don't we move on to what crisis you're running?
Yeah, so these are almost the exact same as last time. I believe I have one change with the Secures. So for Secures, I'm running Demons Downtown, Intrusions Open Across City as Seals Collapse, and Deadly Meteors Mutate Civilians. And I believe the change is the Deadly Meteors, the interact with the Origin Bombs. The reason I swapped out Mutant Madmen for this one, the setup makes a little more sense, a C versus a B, so it's a little more focused, you know, a line kind of down the middle going, you know, the opposite way of like Researcher, but it promotes more fighting in the middle, which is what I want to do. If my opponent rolls bad and gets a skull, that's a free damage on their characters that I'm trying to kill, which would be really nice. I have had a few weird games with it where this is one where the player controlling the most, the majority of the Origin Bomb scores 3 VPs. So I've actually had a game recently where round 1, I was able to flip the middle and my opponent failed to flip the sides, and I was able to get 3 free points for just getting the middle, which felt weird. And it's also one where you might have to bounce back and forth with someone like Mystique or Black Panther that are fast and can get around and try to flip, you know, multiple bombs a turn. So it can get a little awkward when you're forced to go for that majority. But if you can get it and lock it down on, you know, maybe the middle and one of the 2 flanks and just fight there and make your opponent come to you to get majority, it really works out. And another thing is, it's I believe it's 1 point less than Mutant Madmen. I think that one was 18. And with taking out Thanos, I'm fine at playing slightly lower point values now. The other 2 are 19, which, you know, I kind of prefer them to be lower at the moment, but it is what it is. I don't mind playing at 19. It's just less appealing for me without Thanos, because he's almost an auto-include at the tight map setups at that point value. And playing lower point values, Nick, you can attest to this. Our most recent game, we played where I think I chose
17
versus 19, and it made a very tough decision on, you know, which characters you were going to bring. Yep. And if I could put a little pressure on by just choosing 17, being completely comfortable with my squad at 17 and making you make some tough decisions, I really like being in those shoes, where I kind of force you to think a little more, put a little pressure on before the game even starts.
Yup.
That makes sense. Have you not ran into someone that's punished you on the Meteors for score all, or is it something you're not worried about with a 3-0, just that margin of victory they can get going?
Not yet. It almost came up in the last tournament where I played this and Researcher, and I went down the first 3 rounds of the game by a few points, where I just focused on the Researcher and tried to slowly keep at least 1 Meteor and then work to getting another one eventually. By the end of that game, I think I controlled at least 2 or 3 Meteors and was scoring 4 every turn for the last 3 turns on Researcher. But that one could have gone very poorly if I got stalled on the Researcher and my opponent was getting the 3 a turn from this, and I was getting you know, possibly nothing, either 0 or 2 points from the Researcher. Yeah, it could definitely go downhill fast. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but I'm kind of trying it out because, like I said, I kind of want to play at lower point values now, more comfortable with it, and it's a lot more fighty in the middle. But we'll see how it goes this league. If it comes up poorly, you know, at least 1 or 2 games, it might come right back out.
Yeah, and looking at the other Secures, Ryan, there aren't very many that score less than 3, so mm-hmm. I mean, Madmen had the potential to get outscored by 4. Certainly you don't want to look at Gamma. those other secures have the potential for your opponent to score even more than three. So I guess it's probably not the end of the world there. And like you said, it brings the fight to you. So those sea lions are great for attrition teams.
Yep, Mad Men's that one I had in there before, and probably the only one I would swap it out for at this moment in time until they release a few more.
Awesome.
Which hopefully they'll do in the near future. We'll see.
Why don't you run us through your extracts?
Yeah, so this list is exactly the same as the tournament list from last time, running Hammers, a.k.a. Fear Grips, World as Worthy, Terrorize Cities, Research Station Attacked, and the Montesi Formula Found. These are 18, 16, and 17. Like I said, I don't mind playing at 16 and 17 anymore. I felt like I've always had a solid core at those point values, and without Thanos, you know, it's even more appealing to play. Just a little bit lower than, you know, 18, 19, 20. Almost all of them promote fighting. Researcher just promotes me just fighting, ramming right down the middle. As long as the secure isn't going to outscore me long term, I am happy with just going right down the middle. And then maybe having, you know, a Toad or a Mystique kind of go to different secures and let everyone else just fight on the researcher. Montesi's nice. If I don't have priority, a lot of the times my opponent will go grab the middle book, which, you know, you kind of want to, you know, if you got priority, you can go 2-1 on books. But then if they move up, I can just go with Juggernaut, get a punch in, Asteroid M and Magneto, and possibly just get that book right back from you and Daze a character. So I have never really ran into any issues with Montesi before. Really like it. Maybe the only downside you could argue is Juggernaut doesn't really like energy attacks, so I might be giving my opponent a Beam 3 energy into me, so that might hurt sometimes, but I think the benefits outweigh that. And then so Hammers.
He loves the book, though.
He definitely does. I think our last game, I KO'd a character with the extra 3 dice on the first attack, so that a 9 dice energy, and then the follow-up 6 attack.
Yep.
He does not mind holding a book. And
I didn't even know he could read.
Yeah, how can he see through that helmet? And last but not least, Hammers is pretty self-explanatory. Promotes fighting. You know, you've got to be a little more careful with your cards because, say, Magneto has 2 hammers. You know, he's got to pay 4 now for Asteroid M, or I don't know if Mystique gets one. Deception's not free anymore. So just got to be a little more careful playing with it. And, you know, factions like Convocation might have some tricks to get a couple extra on you. Shield and Daredevil might have some new tricks to, you know, go grab 2 in 1 action. So got to be maybe a little more thoughtful versus those teams. But for the most part, I like running into that one. Don't mind when it hits the table.
Yeah, those extracts make perfect sense to me on your Trisha's Spoken roster. Nick, any extract comments?
Nope. I mean,
easy enough.
Ryan consistently beats me when we play, so I trust his judgment at this point.
Why don't you run us through your tactic cards?
Sure thing. Starting off with Restricted, we've got Patch Up and Brace for Impact. Brace for Impact is one that has kind of been in and out recently. I feel like a few of our fellow players that were running Brotherhood for a while have dropped it, you know, whether that's temporarily, you know, and just trying other stuff for fun, or if they're going to, you know, maybe pick it back up. But I have seen a few less throws. The last few games I've played, I'm just looking at my opponent's 10, and I'm like, they have Voodoo that could maybe throw if he hits the table. So I like to have it there. Because it's, you know, it's a huge, you know, oh, my opponent throws a size 4 building at me. I can just pay 1 power and stop 5 possible damage. It's kind of a big safety blanket. And, you know, when I'm running attrition, you know, I want to be killing my opponent more than they're killing me. So maybe one day it would come out depending on the meta, how that shifts, you know, locally. But for now, I like it in there. And then Patch Up, you know, a little less ideal than Med Pack for me if I'm running tall lists. But I can consistently, since playing, you know, a few standard games, get it off for, you know, 3 to 5 heals. And, you know, healing is just insane right now. If you can get off a big heal because, you know, your opponent might be running Patch Up as well. Maybe they're running Hood. You know, the healing's just gone down a lot. So If Juggernaut's sitting there with a book on, 5 damage, and I can just have Toad run up, heal him, and then run back to whatever point he's been sitting on the whole game. It just feels really good. For affiliated or affiliated-like cards, we've got Magnetic Refraction, Asteroid M, pretty standard there. We've got Deception and Do You Know Who I Am? If you're taking Mystique or Juggernaut, you're taking those. They're huge game makers. A lot of the times, your opponent has to play around Do You Know Who I Am? So, fantastic cards. All four of the rest are either new or have rarely seen my list. I think the one that has maybe seen more play for me is Marked for Death. It's a nice counter to stealth characters that have been coming, a little more popular. I also really like it against Web Warriors, which I think is a weaker matchup for me, say if like Cosmic Cubes comes up or something like that. A lot of people look at it and they see the stealth as the primary thing. That character cannot benefit from stealth. They become slower. But they can also not modify or reroll their defense dice. So that shuts off the Web Warriors rerolls, which can be huge because I don't know how many times I played against you, John, back in the day where I'm like, 4 damage, and you roll 3 dice with Miles, and with rerolls, you roll 3 blocks, or maybe a crit and block all 4, and I'm just like, all right. The rest of the three, I'll leave this one for last, but are kind of these two are defensive cards, Recalibration Matrix and Inspiring Monologue. They've both been fairly decent for me. They might come out, if other cards, with a new meta shift for standard, maybe some sleeper cards might take their spots, but I like Matrix because it makes the dice a little more consistent for me, and what I mean by that is I can shut off one spike of my opponent's dice. Hopefully, maybe they'll re-roll into the same amount, which did happen recently with me. I think my opponent re-rolled into the same amount of hits or actually one greater, which kind of sucked, but typically I'm like, oh, my opponent rolls 6 hits and I roll 1 defense dice, pay 3 power and reset it. They roll 3 into my 2 and I only take 1 damage. It's a nice one-time turn off of hopefully a spike in my opponent's dice. With Monologue, it's a full round effect. So I'll go ahead and read it if people haven't heard of this one because it might be a little less popular. An unaffiliated and active. Any allied character may spend 3 power to play this card. Choose another allied character. That character may re-roll any number of its defense dice this round. So this card is great because, say, if I have priority, I can have a Toad or Mystique on the sideline, backline, pay 3 power, and my Juggernaut or my Magneto or my Rogue, for the entire round, they get to re-roll all of their defensive dice at the cost of 3 power on some random character that's on the other side of the board. I think it's fantastic. It can make your opponent just not go into a specific character for a round. So if you're like, I just really want them to shift gears, I'm going to throw this up on Juggernaut. They might not even attack him this entire round. And, he's got a extract on him, so win-win. And last but not least, Nick mentioned this card earlier. I do have Gamma Launch, and it is not for the same play as you mentioned earlier, where Hulk could launch Juggernaut in there, get him super deep into my opponent's line, and then Asteroid him, Magneto him. Though that does sound super fun and awesome, very super fun play. It's more in there when I'm not playing Juggernaut and I want to swap in Hulk for the point values, and it's essentially. I don't want to call it a free Asteroid M, but I could throw essentially Magneto up range 5 instead of 2 power off of him and another character. Hulk will spend, I believe it's 3, and then I just place Magneto 5 up to the center of the table. So a very similar effect. And if I'm not paying, typically when I do Asteroid M, Juggernaut goes to a middle point, a side point, and then I teleport with his the power he gains from moving, he gains 3 power, maybe spends 1 on an objective, and then he's got 2 left, Asteroid M and Magneto, because Magneto will have 2 because he gets 1 and then 1 from the construct turn 1. Here, I don't have to really worry about that. I just place him within 2 of Hulk, and then Hulk just launches him up.
So haven't played it yet, but it's kind of there as just another option in case, Juggernaut doesn't make the list and Hulk does.
Yeah, those are all good shots. I think it's interesting that you brought Brace and Patch up for your restricted cards. I think those are the two of the majority of when I go to play against people that they have. I think Indom kind of took a hit when it went on the restricted list. Makes a lot of sense on those two. It's interesting that you have Gamma Launch. Did you ever think about maybe launching, say, like Mystique or Toad to like a midline objective and then maybe finding it and heading for the hills with it? Or is it only there for that Magneto play you mentioned?
So I haven't thought about that specifically, but now that you do mention it, I'll definitely keep it in mind. That could be a fantastic play. Typically total double move and, hey, he finds the Kree-Core. Here you could launch him up. Maybe move once if he still has to, if he's not in range. Look, gets it, has one or two movements to get away with it.
Yeah,
Like
like
that could be game ending right
he's already
there.
hard to catch. If he's got it and the ability to run, and if I get him, then you're slippery even farther back. You'd never catch him there.
Yeah, your opponent pretty much has to focus their whole game plan on either how can I get to Toad or how can I outscore that 2 points the rest of the game.
Is Recal Matrix there in your mind when you're at a game table and you have it in your five? Are you looking to spike on the offense, or is it there for your defense role on your side of the table?
Say 90% of the time I save it for defensive. I really like in the past, having, Med Pack, Brace, Indomitable, just having this little core of defensive tech cards where I can just say no to what my opponent's doing or, just kind of undo something crazy they just did, undo, a spike of damage. So for the most part, it's usually my fifth card, and it's usually competing with Inspiring Monologue as that last defensive tech. If I don't need Deception, if Mystique isn't hit the table, if I don't need Mark for Death, if Hulk's not there for Gamma Launch, one of those two is coming in as that last card. And it just kind of depends on what my opponent's playing. And if I think they're going to be focusing on like one or two characters of the whole game, Monologue usually comes in. If they've got a super killy list and I feel like they might have, some crazy spikes, Matrix might come in instead.
Makes perfect sense. Nick, any questions on the tactics cards?
Not really. I'm happy to see Inspiring Monologue getting some love. I know you played it in our game a couple days ago, and it definitely deterred me from attacking Juggernaut for a round, so it did its job pretty well. I think that's a card more people should start looking at right now, but yeah, like I said, Ryan consistently beats me, so I'm going to trust his judgment on these.
Ryan, any final thoughts on the roster before we move on?
I don't think so. Just, get the league games in, see if any of the new characters, if they hit the table, if they perform well, like Nick said, see if Heimdall is worth the slot, or do I, swap him out for Hood? Him, Domino, and Hood were kind of all competing for the last three slot, and I chose Heimdall and Domino, and Hood got the cut. But like you've kind of talked about, but on probably repeatedly on repeat. Oh, hey, buddy. Sorry, you can probably cut that out. If you can hear Apollo going crazy, Apollo, give me 1 second.
Yeah, I feel really stupid being like, Ryan, what do you think of this? Because you beat me every game we ever play. So, like, who am I to question you? But let's just pose this question. Like, I don't know the answer to it.
But yeah, like I was saying, Hood was very close to making the list. He's maybe the 11th character at the moment. If we exclude maybe Scarlet Witch, because as he the option to have that extra healing, maybe the Mystic attack just seems super nice. But it's just another character that I feel like whenever I play him, it might just be me, but I target him almost first if my opponent puts him in an opportune place to attack, and if I can, I'm going to daze him round one and KO him top of round two, and they never get to use Hood. So I might have like a weird view of him because I try to remove him from the table ASAP if they let me. But it would be nice having his heal for someone like Magneto or Juggernaut, where, you know, I can't just med pack him like we used to. Oh, med pack. I miss you.
Yeah, it's really crazy. All three of us have Heimdall on our list, so at the end of the league, we'll have to get together and figure out, was he worth it to any or all of us to be there? So he's definitely making a splash.
Definitely.
And we'll see if he makes his weight back.
Yeah, like what faction says he's shining? You know, like yeah. Nick said, you know, maybe Convocation isn't the right spot, but only one game with him so far, so we'll see.
Yep. All right, so I think that about wraps up your roster, Ryan. So let's go ahead and get into this tournament review. We had a tournament at our local game store last Saturday, August 6th, and I was not able to play because I was out of town. Ryan, I don't think you played either, correct?
Correct. I had just too much going on that weekend, and
yep.
Felt like also, if I did play, I didn't have enough standard games under my belt. Everyone probably is going to say that same thing, so that's probably not a good excuse.
But John played. How'd that go, John?
Well, why don't we get into it? First, let's run through the roster one more time. It was the A-Force roster we've been talking about. Let's run through the characters. We brought She-Hulk, Domino, Crystal, Captain Marvel, Scarlet Witch, Black Cat, Shuri Okoye-Hood, and Angela. Because, Nick, we agreed to swap for Medusa, and I left her at home. So,
womp, womp.
So Angela made the list. Spoiler alert, she didn't see the table all four games. So, yeah, that's where she is. For extracts, I ran Alien Ship, Montesi, and Researcher. Secures, Terrigen Clouds, Intrusions Open, and Demons Downtown. And for tactics cards, we had A-Force Assemble, Special Delivery, Stalwart Determination, Mission Objective, Face Me, Whimsy Chaos, No More Mutants, Hood's Gang, Brace for Impact, and Patch Up for Restricted. So, this tournament happened on Gen Con weekend. You guys had some stuff going on. We had a pretty low turnout. We only had 11. So, kind of a lower turnout from what our normal 20-ish turnout is, but still a good group of guys. Round one, I come up against my opponent, Brandon, who is running Web Warriors. So I'm really comfortable with what his roster is. We roll for priority, and I have it. I was looking at his secures and extracts, and his extracts looked way more punishable to me than his secures did, so I chose extracts. And we ended up playing Alien Ship and Cosmic Invasion. He chose 16, so I was really worried going into it. You know, with She-Hulk, I only have, that gives me 10 threat left to play. So I ended up bringing Domino, Black Cat, and Captain Marvel. I knew with the A-Force leadership, Cat would be able to go steal the core if he found it. I knew his plan was probably to find it and run with it. And I knew with the leadership, I'd get it turn one, if not turn two, if we were able to find the core. Brandon ran Miles, Gwen, Panther, Black Cat, and Lizard. So I basically stalled on my activations here until I could get a special delivery going. And he had brought Miles up. He thought Miles was safe, kind of back on, farther back on the cosmic portal. But special delivery is a long way when you make that medium move with Captain Marvel. Place She-Hulk within one of that, plus her base size. I don't think I quite got the free attack off, but then when I activated She-Hulk, I moved up through a size 3 building into Miles and was able to one-shot him. So round one, I've already dazed this leader. It's a good start. He had sent Panther over to kind of back up Miles at that point, and Lizard went to the opposite side of the board to play with Domino. I had priority going into turn two, and this is kind of a theme we're going to see in the day, that if you're able to get those turn one dazes off with special delivery, then you can kind of daze and KO before they have a chance to react, kind of in like the way Black Order does. And that's what happened. Miles was gone top of two. I was able to daze Panther round two. Domino did like 5 damage in a Lizard with a rapid fire. So I didn't even try to take the point. I know he just threw me off, so I just shot 4 times. Top of three, I killed Panther. Brandon was just losing characters left and right. At one point, he had ran Lizard to my cosmic portal. I ran Cat off of it, faced me, so Lizard had to leave it, and just ran Cat back. Yeah, it was a massacre. I kind of had an answer for everything Brandon had going on. He at one point got the core, and I he got on his cat, and I stole it with my cat. So it was just, it was pretty bad. He didn't bring No Webbed up, which I was surprised he didn't have. At one point, he did patch up Panther, and She-Hulk one-shot him anyway. And I was able to take this game 20-8.
Yeah, that sounds just brutal. Looking at what he brought to the table, you know, I would almost lean in his favor with the characters he chose for this objective setup. But man, all it takes is just some good dice on your side and a little bit of misplacement on his side to just get someone knocked out. And then if you have priority, like you said, they have no real option to respond, and they just die at the top of round two.
Yeah, and the problem here,
it's gonna be devastating.
The problem is he moved Gwen up to do an impact webbing and a shield to pull her off of the cosmic, which I was fine. Illa, I think Panther scored it that round one, but I knew then Gwen wouldn't have any power to lifesaver Miles and knew I could kill him. And even to the point of Brandon looking down at his card when I said I was targeting Miles on that top of two and realizing he had spent that power. So it's important thing for the Web Warriors to manage that power resource so effectively, because one misplay, your leader could be gone. Then Panther doesn't have the ability to reroll those skulls, and
they don't have a lot of power to begin with.
It really shut a lot down for him by removing Miles that quick. So that was game one. It felt pretty good overall. I was able to keep Marvel and Binary almost the entire game, so she wasn't going anywhere. It just kind of bullied his remaining characters. So round two comes around. We come back from lunch. I'm feeling pretty good, and I play against Alex. Alex was part of a group that came from Iowa. They kind of took over the store for the day. And he had Guardians of the Galaxy, and he was ready to play. He got the buy round one because we had an odd number of players, so he was really chomping at the bit to get going. And we roll for priority. He wins priority, and he chooses his secures. We end up playing Meteors and Montesi. Alex brought Star-Lord, Rocket, Groot, Ronin, and Ghost Rider. I brought She-Hulk, Crystal, Okoye, Shuri, and Domino. I meant to bring Hood here, and I just kind of spaced it and didn't. Generally, when I'm playing against those attrition teams, I want Hood to be healing She-Hulk, trying to keep her alive. Because I found that against the attrition game, one patch-up isn't enough to keep her alive. With her 3-4-3, she'll take that 20 damage faster than you think she will.
Yeah, squishier than other Hulk.
Exactly, yep. But I didn't bring him. He had brought Rocket up to his left flank Meteor, and so I went for the special delivery. I attacked into Groot. I didn't finish him off. So I ended up activating She-Hulk. I threw Groot out, thinking I'm going to daze Rocket here. And dice are going to dice, and She-Hulk threw two punches at Rocket and did no damage. I just looked at my dice. I looked at my dice in shame, thinking this is how this game is going to go. Alex had some pretty lucky flips, too, on the Meteors, where he was getting, you know, he needed two successes and he'd get them. I think Rocket got it with his two defense at one point with She-Hulk standing on it. And I'm like, oh, man, those early rounds really got me frustrated. But, you know, it's important to be able to keep your composure, look at the table, think about how can I fix this that early in the game, right? Going down 1 or 2 points because you didn't get your dice rolls isn't going to help you finish the game out. So we kept playing. I had moved She-Hulk off of the flank to the middle Meteor. Dazed Ronin with one, maybe it took both my shots, I'm not sure. He counterattacked, did negligible damage. I was able to, before I did that, I had thrown Rocket and Groot way off into no man's land, so I wasn't too worried about Deadly Duo. And kind of just was able to play with Crystal flipping Meteors, like you mentioned, Ryan, to my advantage. Being able to have, I had two books, and I was able to pretty much score the Meteors over and over. I was losing the game on the attrition side, but I was just trying to play the objective game at this point. I did get lucky that Ghost Rider missed a flip with Crystal standing on one. And then at that point, I just sent Crystal and Shuri running for the hills with books because I knew I could win on points. And I pulled this game out 16-11. Got pretty lucky here. Alex probably would have tabled me on the next round. I only had an injured Crystal and Shuri left. So it's important to know that these guys are pretty squishy, and my mistake in not bringing Hood almost cost me this game.
Yeah, that's playing what are they called? Wakanda in the past. Shuri and Okoye can just get one shot super easily. You know, outside of Panther, their team's super squishy. And I think I played both of those, or at least Okoye when I was running A Force. And that's kind of the issue is if your opponent out attritions you know, what do you kind of do at that point? And good on you to just see that, you know, you might not be winning that battle and just, you know, how do you recover from this? How do you get through the last few turns and just pivoting and grabbing those extracts and just running? You know, Crystal moves long, and you know, if you just want to move her once and maybe pop off and incinerate, you know, to have someone kind of fight whoever's chasing her, you know, you've got a lot of options with her.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention this. Star Lord was on my left, his right flank, and Domino was able to daze him. And with Ronan gone in the middle, all of Alex's stuff had been overcommitted to my right, his left flank. So by running with those long and medium movers just to the back corner to score those points, I knew I was fairly safe. So being able to understand how the meteors score, being able to understand you're up on extracts, and playing a couple turns ahead with your points, sometimes could win you a game. So 2-0 there. Pretty excited. Generally, if She-Hulk can't execute and get things going, the games don't tend to go my way, but I was able to squeak this one out. So I'm starting to see kind of how to make this stuff work. We go into game three. Game three was against Brent and his Midnight Suns. I had been playing some practice games against Midnight Suns, and I was not having a lot of success. My buddy Chad and his Siege of Darkness turns were just killing everything left and right I had. So I was really nervous going into this one. We roll for priority, and Brent wins priority. And we end up getting a Researcher and Madmen, and I decide to play 18. In the game, round two, that nothing went my way. Everything went my way in this game. I special delivered She-Hulk to the middle, right to the Researcher, and did a ton of damage into Brent's Voodoo. For this game, he had Blade, Danny, Venom, Voodoo, and Lizard, and I ran She-Hulk, Hood, Shuri, Domino, and Crystal. In the way I said I meant to bring Hood against the attrition team last game, this game I remembered to bring Hood. I made room for Hood. He was there to support She-Hulk with the heals and do a little bit of damage if he needed to. And I was able to get a lot of really good positioning down on this game. She-Hulk fought for the Researcher the entire game, while I was able to put Shuri and Crystal on my left column of the Madmen. And so his Lizard would try to flip a point. Shuri would push him off after he's activated, and Crystal's fast enough with her long mover to bounce back and forth on these columns and just make sure I never lost the left Madmen. My intention was to keep Hood next to She-Hulk for the heals, but he ended up taking the right flank against Blade. I got pretty lucky on a two-die flip and was able to take control of the one Blade was standing on after he activated. And then there was an absolute massacre over the Researcher. Like I said, I dropped She-Hulk off with Crystal before she went off to play on the left column of the thing. Got a ton of damage into Voodoo, but didn't finish him. Then I went to activate She-Hulk, and I had enough power that I sent Venom packing with a medium throw. If you don't have the attrition to deal with Venom, throwing him away medium is just as good because he's so slow coming back, right? It's effectively a stagger plus some. So he was gone, and I'm looking at the board. I'm like, well, I'm going to finish Voodoo off, and then I'll kill him top of two, and I declare the attack. And Brent looks down. He goes, yeah, I'll Heroes for Hire that, because Danny was tucked behind a building. I completely forgot he was there, even though I looked at him when I was throwing Venom away. But She-Hulk spiked and one-shot Danny, which is going to cycle back to what we're talking about with the Comrade's Keeper. When you just one-shot him, it doesn't really matter, you know?
Yep.
So then with their second attack, she dazes Voodoo. This game was a massacre left and right. I played Stalwart top of two, shut down all the throws. You know, Voodoo, Venom couldn't pull me at that point. I had Shuri and Crystal just bullying Venom on that left column the entire game. And at the end of three rounds, I was able to get the Researcher all the way to the score, and this game was 17-3. So this was a bloodbath. She-Hulk killing anybody.
That was a massacre.
Yeah. His siege turn went into She-Hulk and did like no damage. He had brought Venom and Danny with both the bodyguard cards, so he only had Blade and Voodoo that could attack, and they didn't. Voodoo was like a millim. It wasn't Voodoo's. Voodoo did like no damage to She-Hulk. it wasn't Blade's activation. He was like millimeters out of range two against Hood, so he decided to throw the Crescents, and I invisibility cloaked. This game, everything went well for me, and everything just kind of went wrong for Brett. So sometimes that's going to happen, and I got to live the dream of She-Hulk on Researcher.
Yeah, when she wants to spike with dice, she just starts killing left and right, and it feels so fun.
Yeah, and back to my positioning there, while Shiri was there to push Lizard off my left column of the secure, I was also buying defensive and offensive rerolls for She-Hulk with all the power I could off her, which made those dice more consistent for me. And then the kind of last straw was I had Domino activate within range for Shiri upgrades and did like 6 damage to Voodoo off the first rapid fire shot between critting the skulls and buying the rerolls, and Brent's dice weren't there and mine were. So that was that game for more or less.
Yeah, it sounds like Domino's such a perfect fit in feeding her the extra power.
Yeah, when we were looking at your list, Ryan, you're looking at any faction that you can either get the power gen running or pass power around. You know, in Magneto Brotherhood, every time the train's destroyed, you're giving power to Domino. In A-Force, anytime anyone's damaged, I'm giving power to Domino. In humans, mini R&D and that power to Domino. If you can get the power on her and roll 2 skulls and then pay to crit those skulls, and then even better, have Shiri to buy the rerolls with the power that you've pushed around, those two can really hold down any flank they want to, short of a full-blown attrition team.
Yeah, agreed. A lot of people see, you know, an extra 1 or 2 power on her, they're like, oh yeah, you can, you know, grenade bounce this character, and, you know, grenade bounce the other one, get some incinerates off, maybe some lucky explosive damage. But like you said, if you do roll well with any of those attacks into the skulls, and you've got power to convert those into crits, you know, that's a huge spike that she's going to be dishing out.
Yeah. So that was game 3.
Your opponent's not going to expect, you know, Domino to hit you for 5 damage in the face out of nowhere.
Yeah, when you got to look him in the face and almost say you're sorry and say I have 6 successes on a 4-die attack and I have the rapid fire coming at you, like, it's it's brutal. Oh, and by the way, I gained power for that, so if I roll a skull on the next one, it's getting critted. Like, yeah, she's sneaky killy. People don't expect that from her. So overall, I'm 3-0. We got 1 game left. It feels pretty good. I get the table against Jason, who had a pretty cool Cabal roster. He was playing Magneto in Cabal. So he had a super killy kind of cosmic invigoration Magneto list going on with Red Skull. We roll for priority. I end up taking it. And I pick my extracts. So we end up playing Montesi and Riot Spark. So he brings... I'd been watching his games because I was finishing pretty early, kind of seeing what he's running, and he kind of counter-dropped me in turn 0. I think he played better than I did. He brought Magneto, Red Skull, Bullseye, Bucky, and Toad. Not quite what I thought he was going to bring. I ended up bringing She-Hulk, Scarlet Witch, Black Cat, and Crystal. I knew that against this super high-end attrition team, I wasn't going to be able to go toe-to-toe. So which was there to deal with Bucky, and I brought No More Mutants because I knew I had to shut down Magneto on a critical turn. And Cat was there just to make sure I could get some books because I knew I wasn't going to be able to win on the attrition. I had to win on the objective. So I priority, I send Cat to that middle book. I know you had mentioned that it's not always the best play, Ryan, but in a team where you have the bodyguards, I knew that my second activation I could get She-Hulk within range to bodyguard. So I wasn't too worried about her getting one shot with stealth. She was only going to take one attack from one person at max, and Jason actually didn't end up attacking her at all. So I was able to get Cat a book and kind of run around, scoring either the back or the flank riots at the Extremist Council or the Riot Spark and keep her safe. And I picked up a book later in that round as well. And I think Scarlet Witch picked one up while she positioned. So I'm up on books. I'm scoring Extremis. I go in and special delivery. She-Hulk goes up there. Doesn't really get much done. And my greatest fear happens in round 2 when She-Hulk takes 20 damage and she's standing there and she's gone. So I'm looking at the board. I've lost my leader. It's round 2. Trying to figure out how I'm going to come back to this. This is a list I probably should have thought about bringing Hood again for the heals, but I just didn't. I knew I wanted No More Mutants to shut Magneto down the turn I had to. So I ended up sending Witch to just nuke Bucky, right? His Mystic is so weak, she's not going to have any problem dealing with him. She dazes and KOs Bucky. Magneto goes to throw some huge piece of terrain at her, and I play No More Mutants to keep her alive for the round. And I basically send Kat and Crystal, both long movers, just running around with books, trying to pivot from secure to secure, scoring points. And this is where you hear people talk about late game, and I'm looking at the board, and I realize that if I can score 3 points the turn I'm on, and then 2 points, and then 2 points, I'm going to win faster than he can score with his one book and his three remaining characters. So I score my 3 points by running Crystal into the corner, and he doesn't commit to chase her. Cat is able to sit on a secure for one round and then also run in the corner. And it feels bad, but in a tournament setting, you know, you're playing for the victory. Final table here. And with Crystal and Cat standing in the corner, I take this game 16-13.
Yeah, it sounds like his list was pretty slow, right?
Yeah, I had dealt with Bucky, so all he had left was Magneto, who was far on the opposite flank, sitting on a secure on an Extremis Council, and I was in the opposite side of the table in my corner. And Magneto doesn't want to start making those moves. And even if he does, my double longs are and Cat can hook too, so I'm probably going to get away from him. I was able to get a...
Yeah, he can't chase at all.
Right, I was...
Unless he double moves and has enough power to throw. Right,
and I was able to get a slow on Red Skull with Crystal before I ran away. So he just... it was too late in the game, and he allowed me to kind of get that position I needed to then, on my turn, order of activation, get my characters into safety. But yeah, She-Hulk can definitely go down, and she certainly did here. Now, we did come up into an interesting interaction here I want to run everyone through, one I didn't think of. And that was the turn she died, Bucky was the one that killed her by making two of his spender attacks. And that is called Red Fury. It's a 7-die physical attack and costs him 4 power. After this attack is resolved, the target character is pushed away from this character short, and then Bucky can immediately make an assault rifle attack. And what we found out later is, on the forums, if the character is unable to be pushed, the assault rifle attacks can't happen. So I'll read that judgment off the rules form for you guys. And this is a question about Vision in his physical mode, or Hulkbuster built to take it, any kind of Excedra thing that stops the push. When a rule lists multiple things that occur during its resolution, if one thing cannot happen, the subsequent effect will not happen. So that is a judgment on the rules form, which means that the push needs to happen for the assault rifle attack to be made. It doesn't matter if the character isn't moved with the push, so like if they're pushing them in a terrain or they're blocked with another character, if they are pushable and you make like a no-range push, then you can still make the assault rifle attack. But I had played Stalwart Determination that round, which denies a character being pushed, so interesting there. Kind of a weird interaction with Winter Soldier. Definitely a feels-bad kind of moment, but keep that.
Yeah, I think it's important to make the distinction that the way it's very important the way that the rule on Bucky's attack is worded, because that is all part of one bullet point under the attack, and I think that's why it is ruled that way. If it was pushed one bullet, target character is pushed away short, after and then a second bullet after the attack is resolved, make a rapid fire or make a pistol or assault rifle, I think that you would still like it would be ruled differently. But because it's all one bullet point, I think that's the way it's ruled the way it is.
Yeah, when you look at abilities the abilities that have two different bullet points, yeah, absolutely, Nick, that makes sense. But it's important to realize Bucky's is only if then on one bullet point. So just something to keep in your mind.
Yeah, it's got that keyword, yep, then.
Indomitable would stop it then. Attack. If you wanted to keep somebody alive, you could indomitable that push, not be pushed, and then not have to take the assault rifle. Pretty situational if that was something you were thinking of doing, but if you're keeping a key character alive, it might not be worth it. But yeah.
That's super easy to overlook.
Yeah, and that's one that we played wrong. Thankfully, I was able to recover and kind of sneak away a victory there, but overall, with the A-Force, went 4-0, only undefeated team on the day, and ended up walking in the first place in this tournament with them.
Well, congrats. Do you think the timing has anything to do with the She-Hulk TV show coming out?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, it was, people saw it and like, oh, we gotta let, you know. A couple things, just kind of
sponsored by Disney.
Yeah, get that
sponsor
get
us.
Get the shameless plug in there. Overall, kind of reflection on A-Force. Their tactics cards are fantastic. Special Delivery is a great affiliated card. Stalwart Determination, I played every single game, and it makes your opponent look at the round completely different. Those cards are fantastic. Their list of affiliated characters is fantastic. Shuri, Okoye, Domino, Witch, Crystal, Captain Marvel, even She-Hulk, when we're not looking at her as the aspect of the leader, can have a place. The one thing I would like to see them change to them is I would like another leader, maybe a three-threat leader. You could still play She-Hulk, but make your opponent guess if she's going to hit the table. It's a little frustrating for me to get to a table, and before you even go for your cards, your opponent's like, "Can I see what Special Delivery says?" And you're like, "Yeah." You know, it's mm-hmm. so readable, and that's the one thing I did not like about them is how readable that play is.
Very predictable.
Right.
Especially if you've seen them before.
You know, we do need a second leader for A-Force, too, because we have to be able to play the card at some point, so...
John, did you end up cutting, or did you still have their other affiliated card where you can add, I believe it's defensive dice equal to the number of affiliated characters next to like an A-Force?
That's A-Force Assemble, and I was so ashamed I thought it was Avengers Assemble that I just never read it or brought it. Honestly, every game I played, it was Special Delivery, Stalwart Determination, Patch Up, Brace. And then I kind of flexed that fifth card. That last game I brought No More Mutants. The game I played Hood, I brought Hood's Gang.
Mm-hmm.
And those four were kind of locked in, and then I just kind of... I played Face Me, I think, two games.
Yeah, it sounds kind of similar to my Brotherhood list, where it's almost always the same four, you know, depending on what characters hit the table, and then that last slot, you know, what's the best card there?
Yeah,
I wonder if... with A-Force Assemble, if maybe that could come in on something like Researcher, where you might have, you know, two characters just always standing next to each other on the Researcher, you know, maybe a third. But it sounds like for the most part, for your games, it might not have even mattered because you're so spread out with, you know, characters just running objectives all over the place.
Yeah, I think it's dependent on what your secure is when you're playing Researcher. Like, in my instance, I had to play Mad Men, so I was on those columns. But if you can get a centralized, maybe if it was Demons or Gamma and Researcher, and you can guarantee everyone's gonna be bunched up, it makes sense. It's definitely situational, and I wasn't looking for the opportunity to play it, which might be part of the problem with it. But yeah, I mean, Stalwart, yeah. Having when you can look at your opponent top of two and be like, I'm paying a power on everybody, and they have power because you would probably attack She-Hulk last round, and it's the power phase, and it only cost one. And look, everyone but Hood is not getting thrown or pushed this round. Stalwart Determination was the MVP of the day. Like, even with Domino doing 6-7 damage, She-Hulk one-shotting people, that Stalwart card changes the game state so much. So yeah, overall, they were pretty fun. Just a little minor frustration with the leader and the fact that it is the only leader. I think to make me enjoy A-Force more, the only thing I would need is like a three threat, maybe like a Jessica Jones leader or someone along that, maybe a lower threat, three threat leader. And I would still play She-Hulk. I would just have the option to flex down, you know, in the same way Magneto can flex down to Mystique if the matchup isn't optimal for you, Ryan. I get into those positions, my only option is to play without a leader. So that was the only sense of frustration. Overall, the A-Force, they're a fun team. The depth of characters they can tap into that are so good is insane. Probably one of the best affiliated rosters out of the game.
Yeah, didn't you play 9 affiliated
characters? Hood was my only unaffiliated character, and there wasn't a time when I looked at it and thought, oh, I need this, I need that. I was able to do everything I wanted with the roster I had, short of not bringing the Deuce on.
How often do you see that many affiliated outside of like Avengers?
Right, and they're the only reason they were there was I needed affiliated flyers for Special Delivery, and they do get the benefit from Stalwart. But in general, the characters are just that good. It was easy to bring them.
I feel like a lot of people crap on Crystal, and then they see her on the table, and it's like, she's a long mover. Yeah. Special Delivery is long.
She attacks three times.
Yeah, she can attack three times, dish out Incinerate, other random conditions that rarely come up but can be there. She's got a defensive reroll. Like, she is fantastic for three.
Yeah, you get that long move with the drop or the special delivery, and then she can just go off to a flank and play. Like, in my instance on Madden, where she was able to pivot back and forth on the column, she was invaluable to be shutting down his secure game and forcing him to play on the researcher against She-Hulk. If you look at other test games I played, I've sent her to a D secure, just let her slow and incinerate characters that want to leave that secure and allow me to get the attrition game going on the other side of the board. My concern was she was only a special delivery device, but she definitely has other things to be doing in the game. So she definitely surprised me. I was down on her before, especially when I played Inhumans. I don't think I even played her. But after getting through this, I think she made three out of the four games I played. So Crystal's moved up in my personal rankings for sure. I think with that.
Yeah, well, congrats again. I'm super excited to see you take a victory, and especially with a fun faction like this where you don't see them too often.
Yeah, 4-0. That's impressive.
Now I just have to do it when you boys come to the tournament too, you know? You gotta like...
we all know I'm not that good at this game, so...
You definitely have your days for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. What was it, top four Adepticon?
Yeah, you know, that might be a fluke.
Adepticon 2022 Contest of Champions, top four finisher, Nick Joloff Waffle.
Yeah, top four finisher.
All right. Yeah. I think, do we have anything to add after that, boys?
I'm good.
I'm
Ryan,
good.
Do you have anything else you want to throw in?
No.
All right.
I mean, just random side note, man, Nick, I feel like you've just been playing the fun factions lately. You know,
I played
X-Men before. You're playing some wizards that you don't have experience with.
That's what I do, though. Yeah. I play this game more as an escape because I like the IP and like the what if of it all. I mean, everybody likes winning, but I don't necessarily mind losing games. So I like rolling dice with, you know, superheroes. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel like if you ever did swap back to your God, what was the deadly combo that I loved you playing?
Criminal Syndicate, Spider Foes.
Yep. I think that's such a good combo, man.
Oh, it's great.
If you ever wanted to sneak some wins out, just pull that back out again. Guarantee you get some wins in.
Oh, yeah. I'm waiting to see what these new Spider Foes releases that are coming down the pipeline. See if there's maybe some Shadowlands Daredevil Spider Foes in the works.
God, yeah, he's so good. John made me... have a newfound respect for him when he was just wiping Captain America and Panther off the table.
Yeah, I'll do the mystic area attack.
Yeah.
Would you like to body?
Maybe next time I'll just ignore him. that's what I did our last game with Nick. I just ignored him.
Yeah, in the same way you just ignore Black Bolt. If you ignore him, he's not doing crazy amounts of stuff on his other side.
Yeah, once he gets into the fight, he's probably dishing out some damage. But you know, if you're not giving him power, it's not going to be as crazy. You're not flipping him into his crazy A2 mystic attack, I believe it is.
Yeah. All right. So I think that about wraps us up for today. As always, if you are enjoying the content, please be sure to rate and review. And if anybody wanted to get a hold of you, Ryan, to pick your brain about Brotherhood or get a game with you on TTS, where could they find you?
Yeah, I am DippinDot69 on most of the Crisis Protocol Discords, or if you just post in the Versatile Strategy Facebook page, I'll probably see that as well.
Excellent, excellent. John, what about you?
I am Ancurio on all the major MCP Discords, and like Ryan said, if you want to get a hold of us, the best place to do so is probably your Facebook page, Versatile Strategy. That's where all the voting happens for what affiliations we play. So if you guys are interested in helping us form the content that we discuss on the show, that is the place to do so. Once the tournament is announced for the store next, we will get a poll going on what I will be playing. So if you're interested in that, make sure you go over there, like the page, follow it. Nick, how about you?
I'm Waffle on all the various MCP Discords, and we out.
Ryan, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Always a good time.